Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Patricia McGiven. She's the author of a book, Angel Babies, Messages from Miscarried and Other Lost Babies. And she's written that largely from her own experience and, of course, included others. So we will invite Patricia onto the program. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. even if a wee bit late, we're glad to have you with us now. The subject of your book is probably somewhat unusual, that it focuses on angel babies. What was your view about contact with spirit before you actually had your own experience? I mean, did you believe that contact could be made?
I would say that I believe that contact could be made to adults, let's say, who had passed, but it never occurred to me, I guess, that you could hear from a miscarried or other early lost baby.
Because some people might think, how could a baby do it? But of course, you'll probably agree that we're not talking about a baby spirit at that stage. We're talking about a spirit that's going to come into a baby's body.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So how long ago did you have your own experience?
Well, my baby would actually be 19 years old now,
right.
And I had the experience 4.5 years after the miscarriage. So it was long past the grieving stage, and by then I had had another baby that came after the baby that I lost, who I learned was a little boy named Dylan. Mm-hmm. So it took me some time before I began writing the book and finding out that that I wasn't crazy and I hadn't lost my mind and that these things are possible and happen not only to me but to other people worldwide when I began my research.
Right. Now, how did you get the first actual contact? Because presumably when you were prompted by Dylan, at first you may not have even realized what was taking place. So tell us about your early experiences with that.
Well, I think the first thing probably that happened, that before I was aware of the next big step that would be coming, was that when I was pregnant with Dylan, we planted a tree for him so that we could watch the tree grow as the baby grew within me and then grew up. And the tree never grew. In fact, after we had lost Dylan, it was so dead, Mike, that the limbs were brittle, and I would say to my husband, go cut the tree down. The baby didn't live, and either is the tree. And it was a reminder of what we had lost. And it was probably about 3.5 years later, that one day I was looking outside, my husband never did cut it down, and I thought I saw green growth. And when I ran over there to look at the tree, it had come to life, and it was starting to bud. And I thought, how can this be? This tree has been dead 3.5 years. And somehow, somewhere deep within me, I just realized it was some kind of a sign from the baby that the baby was okay. And I didn't think much past that, although that was startling. And today the tree is about 20 feet high and quite large. But it would be a year later that he really got my attention. And I was waking up from one of those rare naps that moms take when their other children are napping. And I heard next to me, right before I, you know, opened my eyes, that in-between state, I'm right here. And when I opened my eyes, I was afraid it was my daughter who had gotten up before I had. Nobody was in the room. And I just assumed she was on the other side of the closed bedroom door. But I quickly found out she was nowhere downstairs. And as I'm trying to put together in my mind, you know I heard a voice. It was very clear. It didn't sound like it was in the room. TV's not on, radio's not on, you know, as you try to rationalize something, an answer, I questioned in my mind, well, what did I hear? And the answer came in my mind, you'll find Megan upstairs. And I ran upstairs, and she was asleep in her little bed, and I was again trying to make sense of what I had heard, and the answer came, the voice you heard is the baby you lost. And that's how the story began. I was so, you know, when these things happen to you, they're so amazing and so real that I never doubted that experience in my path. But that experience began to unfold. And then a night later, I heard Mommy in the middle of the night. And again, assuming it was one of my two little girls, I woke up and said, Mommy's here, and nobody was in the room. And when I went through my closed bedroom door, I knew it was the same voice because my girls wouldn't have closed the bedroom door. And then I was getting a massage a few days later, and this one was what we would call metaphysical, and that was back in a time where I didn't really know what that completely meant, and I wasn't necessarily drawn to it. I think I was probably more open than I realized, but I thought, who comes to these places? And she began massaging me, and she began telling me that my baby was there and what he looked like. Mm-hmm. And the more information she gave me, the more I thought she really has him, because she was describing him as how he looked, how my other two girls look, with very blonde hair, and I do not have blonde hair, and just other things. She talked about there's a little bear that he's got a little red wagon. And I said, describe the bear to me, because just a week earlier I had been in a store and bought this antique-looking bear, and I was so drawn to it. And it was my bear. It wasn't for my two little girls. And I didn't know why I had to have that bear. And she ended up describing that specific bear. And there were things like that that happened that really got my attention. And then I just said, turn me over, and I want to talk to him myself, because I thought, let me just see if I can talk to him in some way. And I didn't see him, but I felt a presence to my left of me. You know, it's like when you're in a crowd and all of a sudden you feel like somebody's very close, and you turn around and they're there. And he began to, you know, share information with me, and that's how it began.
Right. You must have felt that it was rather strange that the child or the baby that you lost was coming back to you in this way, because everything suggests that this was pre-planned. Did you not wonder why it worked out that way, that the baby had to miscarry before the soul could then come back and contact you? I mean, was any explanation given for that?
Yes. It's very funny, because when I first found out in my doctor's office that I was pregnant, and when the baby was due, it was very close to my dad's birthday, who had passed. And I was not metaphysical at the time, and I didn't necessarily believe in reincarnation. I don't think I didn't not believe, but it wasn't part of my belief system, I'll say. And my first uncensored thought, if you've ever had one of those, like, where did that thought come from, was the baby will be coming on your dad's birthday, because it is your dad coming back to you. And it was one of those things where you just kind of like look around like, did somebody just say that to me? And why would I have that thought? And what was that all about? And I think actually it was my soul telling me and perhaps reminding me. I do believe now that it was decided upon before I came into this life that this experience would happen. And through a regression, I learned firsthand that this was, in fact, my dad coming back to me to help me grow. and that he found a way to reach his goal. You know, we each have goals as souls of what we want to accomplish at a very early stage. And it was to propel me on this spiritual path, and perhaps so that, you know, it would continue unfolding so that I would write this book, which Dylan told me to do, the same massage therapist that I went to and first had the experience of seeing him. It was so startling to me, Mike, that after I came home and told my husband, and I thought he didn't believe me, that I think it was too much for me to take in, and I completely forgot an amazing experience until I went back to get another massage. And she's like, you know, what did you think of the last session? And I'm like, you know, I had a good massage. And she reminded me, I talked to your dead baby. And with that, everything came back except I could not remember his name. And she began massaging me, and she said, he's here. And it was during that time that he told her one of my life's missions was to write a book titled Angel Babies to help heal the mommies who've lost their babies. I did not accept that mission for 4.5 years, but during that time, I read everything spiritual I could find my hands on, you know, whether it be near-death experiences, past life regression, angels, and began hearing from him in other ways, and just kept nudging me along this path to write the book.
Right. Now, bearing in mind that this miscarriage was so long ago, has Dylan kept in contact with you ever since?
Yes, I mean, it's not something that's daily or anything, but yes, in different ways, he continues to come through, and he may come through in readings with psychics, and I was told recently he will be returning. And, of course, now I believe in reincarnation. This spiritual path actually led me to become a hypnotist, and I specialize in past life regression, and I've been doing that for 13 years now. And so now I've become an expert on something I knew nothing about before. But so, yes, he will be coming back, and apparently I will recognize him is what I'm being told. And he comes in other ways, too, and that's the thing, you know, and that's what so many people wrote to me about. Not always mothers. Sometimes the babies come to the fathers or to a neighbor or a friend, somebody who will get the message to the person, whether it's, you know, they can come through the dream state. There was one situation where a sibling, actually, that came after the lost child drowned, had a near-death experience. And when that child came back, talked about meeting her brother that her parents had never talked to her about, knew his name and knew what he looked like. And, you know, there are so many ways, even coincidences, you know, very strong coincidences can be signs.
Right. So does it follow that with every miscarriage there is a soul? In other words, is it possible for a fetus to develop and then be miscarried without a soul attaching?
Well, I don't know that for certain, but I will say this. The information that I've received has been that the soul goes in and out, you know, at different times during the development. But I kind of get the impression they claim a body, so to speak, for the lessons that they will learn in that lifetime, choosing the parents for the lessons to be with them. And that isn't always something someone wants to hear if they came from a, you know, less than ideal home life. But if you begin to look at these things from a higher perspective, and what have I learned, that these are, that every choice has, to some degree, there's always free will, of course, but been orchestrated, and that includes when we come and when we go.
Right.
So we made the choice, you know.
Yes. So they pick you as parents, and you obviously must be part of the agreement, and then it develops from there.
Right.
Now, I have heard that at the very last knockings, that if a soul, for some reason, doesn't want to go forth with the birth, they can pull out of it. Have you come across that before?
Yes, that's exactly. I had one woman that I met from Puerto Rico in the dream state. Her baby came to her. She was pregnant, and the baby said, "I'm sorry, I have to leave you. It's not a good time to come into your life right now. I love you, and I will see you later." And for this mother, she was comforted knowing that the baby had come to say goodbye, basically. 1 month later, her husband died suddenly and unexpectedly.
Hmm.
So we can only guess, you know, what the reasons were, but perhaps that soul needed a father figure in its life for whatever soul's mission it wanted to accomplish, or, you know, there are so many different scenarios. Sometimes the child, even the loss of a baby is part of a soul contract, because the growth can come in other ways. Another woman wrote to me that through a psychic, she was told that the baby was sent for a very important reason, and that it was something that she chose to do as a last path before she was even born. And the baby was sent to help her heal 7 generations past and 7 generations to come. And she didn't understand the meaning of the past, but she did understand the future, because her father and her had never had a close relationship, and he had really never been there for her. But when she was in the hospital to deliver what she knew would be her dead baby, he came, and he didn't leave once, even to get food, holding her hand as her husband held her other. And she said that more healing took place in those 36 hours than could have ever taken place in 10 years.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
They have this expression, I believe, that spirit moves in mysterious ways. And actually, when you hear stories like that, they're wonderful ways, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
Now, a question I want to ask you is that my wife had a miscarriage in 1967, which would, had it been a birth, would have made that soul about 44-year-old now. Now, if you hypnotize me, could you still go back to that soul that far back? I mean, has that happened? Have you picked up sort of old links, as you might call them?
Yes. What I have done is, one of the stories is in my book, a client came to me who wanted to have more closure with the baby she had lost. And so, you know, when you're in a deep state, you can get to it a lot of ways, but I'm just going to use the word hypnosis now. We're able to access that deeper part of us that knows everything and remembers everything from all of time. And you can go back to, you know, the planning stage even of this lifetime, and you can go to the in-between stage. And so her daughter came forward to her and explained to her why she had to leave, but that she came even briefly to just show her what love looked like. Oh, I've got goosebumps just talking about that. And the woman said, she did. That was the gift she gave me. I finally knew what love was when I was pregnant, and she was able to step into that. So, you know, we remember these babies no matter how old we get. I was giving a talk in South Florida a few months ago, and a 92-year-old woman came up to me with her walker, and she just looked up at me, and she said, "I lost a baby when I was very young, and I still think about that baby." So, you know, just even in today's society, we hardly acknowledge still a miscarried baby. And that for the parents who want this child, it's a real child, you know. It doesn't matter
Indeed.
That we haven't seen the baby. And this love, the love continues, even for 70 years or more. Yeah.
Right. Now, how did your interests move on to doing past life regressions? I mean, what made you sort of take up that as well?
Yeah. That really happened because when I began reading everything I could, you know, that spiritual growth period I was telling you about near-death experiences and past life regression, when I read Brian Weiss's book, Many Lives, Many Masters, that was the first book I had read about reincarnation. And it resonated so deeply with me. I'm going to say maybe it reminded me. Because remember, I had that thought that the baby was my dad returning, and it was kind of like, who had that thought? You know, that's not my thought. And so something, it felt right to me for the first time. You know, for me, like the term eternal life made sense. And I began reading everything I could on that and eventually ended up experiencing my own past lives, you know, through past life regression, and then wanted to become a guide and actually ended up training with Dr. Brian Weiss. So it kind of felt like it came full circle in that way. And I just find that work fascinating. And in fact, the next book that I'm writing is called Soul Explorer, Healing Through Past Life Regression, because I've seen amazing things in my practice and how just going back and re-experiencing these different times can heal us physically, emotionally, in all ways, and that's fantastic.
Is it the case that when people come to you for past life regression, that they are actually looking to try and clear some problem they've got in this lifetime, which they feel may be connected with the previous life?
They come to me for so many different reasons. Some people come to me just because they're curious, because they read a book and they want to see what it's like. I've had people come to me, you know, I do all sorts of hypnosis, so phobias are wonderful to work with hypnosis. And I had one woman come to me to work on a fear of heights, and we ended up, she spontaneously regressed into another lifetime. And we have been doing healing on that, and she has actually, you know, she was not metaphysical at all when she came in to see me, and she has been going on basically a soul exploration journey for the last year or so and discovering all these different lifetimes, and the healing has been incredible. In fact, she's going to be one of the main people in this book that I talk about in Soul Explorer, because with her, we even went back to the planning stage so that she could understand why she chose her mother, who it turned out was extremely violent with her in this lifetime. In fact, she has no hearing in one of her ears as a result. And in the planning stage and seeing her mother's, I'm going to call it even her oversoul, you know, her highest soul, so to speak, she felt her mother's pure love for the very first time. She never experienced anything like that in human form. And she got a very clear understanding and awareness that the mother loved her so much, she would be this horrible person for her to help her learn lessons that she wanted to learn of forgiveness. And today, as a result of that session, all of those feelings towards her mother, and you know how you can still get triggered, they're all gone. It's gone.
Right.
Forgiveness is the key, but it's, you know, it's not always easy for everybody to get there. But when you're in this state and you have a better understanding of a higher self, so to speak, it's easier to understand and accept and forgive, because forgive is really letting go, isn't it? And so that we don't hurt ourselves, because holding on to that anger only hurts ourselves in the end.
Mm. That obviously is a very unusual concept, I think, for people to accept. I mean, I totally believe what you've just said, but some people would find it hard to believe that someone that loved them could actually take that type of role where perhaps there was physical abuse or even more. It seems strange, doesn't it, in a way?
Yes. Oh, yeah, it seems unbelievable. And also, I think what may happen is there's still free will once we get here, and sometimes it may be a little worse than what maybe we had signed up for.
Mm.
And so that does make it more difficult, but it's, if we look at it from a higher perspective, what is it we were to learn, and did we learn it? And, you know, in past life regression work, you know, whatever your themes are in this lifetime, that say it's abandonment, I can assure you that in another lifetime, you have experienced abandonment, or maybe you were the one who abandoned. And
right.
So that we learn all sides of something for, you know, balance. That's really what
yes.
karma is, balance, right?
Yes. Well, that's an interesting comment you've made there, because it is perhaps easy to understand that if someone in a previous life rejected or abandoned one of their own children, that they might well volunteer to come into a later life to experience what it was like, so that they have an appreciation of the perhaps the trauma, the emotional damage, etc., that that causes. So it sounds right, but it's you have to say they are brave souls, I think, that take on these difficult incarnations. Do you think that everybody comes in with a major problem to sort out?
I'm not going to look at it as a problem so much as there's something that they've come to learn in this lifetime. Sometimes we do have easy lives, too, like this might be a resting lifetime for some people. But I do think that there's something that we want to learn or to try to accomplish when we come into human form. I think that's why we come.
Hmm. Oh, yes. I mean, one would say that a life would probably be wasted if we just sat down sort of playing a guitar and singing every day.
Right. Right. And how do you know what is wonderful unless you've experienced some of what's not so wonderful?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, after all, this is a cycle of duality, and everywhere we go, probably we're faced with things of a lesser nature. They're always a challenge to us. So I think there's probably not a day goes by that we have to make some decision or other about something we do or don't do, and the way we treat people, the way we talk to them, and so forth.
Yes, I agree.
Now,
yes.
Since you've been doing past life regressions for quite a long time, is there any particular one that stands out because it's unique or rather exceptional in any way that you can tell us about?
Well, I think what is always just amazing to me is when somebody comes to me and who is not metaphysical and doesn't even know that I do that type of work, although the cat's kind of out of the bag now that I've written the book. But, you know, when people come to me for, you know, like a phobia, and just, you know, they think they're going to do whatever they might think traditional hypnosis is. One client came to me who would wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't go back to sleep. And so we were going to just, I do a lot of regression work, you know, regress to the emotional root cause of whatever the issue is, and because that deeper part of us knows exactly why this is happening, and also we know how to heal ourselves. So at any rate, I just regressed her, go back to when this, you know, feeling first began, and she spontaneously regressed into another lifetime where she was a man. And her voice dropped just a little bit, and she said, well, I'm a man, and I'm about to be hung, and I did it. And as the story unfolded, she was about, well, he was about to be hung for horse thievery. Now, what was interesting about this was, first of all, she thought it was very creepy. The whole thing was like, you know, but the more I tried to explain to her that some people look at it as a psychodrama of the mind, or, you know, it could be a metaphor, she would just look at me, and this is after the session, after she was out of hypnosis, and she would just say, no, I am that man. I you know, that was no metaphor. And so it was very interesting that she would own it, although it was completely foreign to her. I'll be honest, I did not know why we went back to that lifetime. And when she came back to me, it became very clear. And I also, side note, I always trust that wherever we go in a session is exactly where the client needs to go, which is why it's important for the hypnotist or guide, you know, to basically kind of just stay out of the way because we never know where they're going to go. And when she went home and was talking to her husband, well, first of all, let me regress a bit. When he was hung, where the rope went around his neck was in the exact same place that she had been in a car accident 8 years earlier, which she did not tell me in her intake form that she had neck pain. And so when she was explaining this to her husband, he said, well, honey, that's why you wake up at night. Your neck is hurting. Something she had not told me, or she might not even remembered why she would wake up and couldn't go back to sleep. After that one session, she came back and she said, the pain in my neck is not only gone, but she had been going to a chiropractor for 7 years, 2 times a week. 7 years, gosh, 2 times a week. And when she went back after our session, she said that he said, you are in complete alignment. What have you done? And she looked at me. She said, I'm so sorry, Patricia, but there was no way I was going to tell him what I had done. But today she's walking and riding a bike and sleeping through the night, of course. And, you know, that's always amazing to me when things like that happen. You know, somebody who doesn't even believe in anything, and it just happens.
Mm. Now, it's interesting that someone brings back some sort of trauma or pain or marks of something that's happened physically before. But I wonder what the reason is that she carried that feeling in the neck with her. I mean, what was the object of that, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but I do know that we do, you know, think of it even in a positive way, like child prodigies. They come back and they, you know, these three-year-olds who can play Mozart or something, you know, it's amazing. It's they're bringing this knowledge from another time. And I suppose if we can do that, then there's a chance we can also bring back other, you know, perhaps physical issues that may happen at a time when it happened in a past life. Or Ian Stevenson did a lot, Dr. Ian Stevenson did a lot of work with showing examples of birthmarks even, where just like, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's all fascinating to me, and how the soul wants to grow and creates these opportunities of different experiences to grow. She also shared with me that, and she did this on her own, that while she was taking a bath, she began to hold in her mind's eye, hold herself as the man who had fallen from, you know, the hanging. When he fell, he also hurt the bottom of his spine. And she said she was in another car accident where the bottom of her spine hurt. And as a result of cradling herself as the man, that too, that discomfort was gone.
Yes. I find that very strange indeed, as to what the purpose of it is, bearing in mind, as you pointed out, we have these series of lives through which we're learning things. If we fail, we can always sort of take the test again. So that's a little bit of a mystery to me. Now, when you mentioned birthmarks there, I remember reading of someone who had been shot in a previous life, and when they were born into this one, the birthmark was where the bullet entered their body. Is that what you found yourself, that they have an association with some physical wound or damage from a previous life?
Yes, I haven't experienced that at this point with any of my clients where I've seen a birthmark like this that's come from another time, but I've read there's so many stories, clinical stories from doctors, that it's very impressive. And, you know, the other thing is I had someone ask me, you know, oh, does everybody go back to a famous lifetime? And, you know, after 13 years, yes, I've had a few people who have gone back to be, you know, perhaps someone, you know, well-known. But overall, in thousands of regressions, no, they're usually just a common person that you can't even find, you know, to examine the lifetime because it was so long ago or so. But it always has great meaning to that person in terms of healing.
Hmm. Right. Now, you mentioned that you do different types of hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Does everybody respond to hypnosis, or have you ever had a client who you couldn't get to sort of do anything?
If someone comes to me and says, you can't hypnotize me, I usually just say, you're right, I can't, because to me, hypnosis is a consent state. So unless you want to be hypnotized and you allow yourself to be hypnotized, you know, you're not going to be hypnotized. But the key is, in the work that I do, is that the more you let go, the more information comes. So most of the people who come to me have an experience. But, yes, there have been people who, if some people come and they're so anticipatory, you know, like, is that it? Is that it? You know, that they're not relaxing enough to, or if you begin to analyze it, analyzation is in the conscious mind, and we don't want to talk to the conscious mind. We want the conscious mind to go sit in the corner for a few minutes. But the more we let go and that deeper part of us that remembers everything from all of time comes forward, that's where you get the very, very good information.
Right. After hypnosis, do people still remember what they've told you, or is their memory blanked out again?
Good question. No, you're going to, it's for those people who had an experience where a loved one has come to them in the dream state after they've passed, you know, it's a very real experience that you always remember because it's not a dream. You know, they really are coming to you. When we're asleep, you're kind of, you know, when you're falling asleep or waking up, you're in that in-between state. That's when I heard from Dylan the first time. You know, you're in that in-between state where they can access you. And now that I've gone off track, I forget your question.
Do they remember afterwards?
Oh, do they remember afterwards? Yes.
Yes.
It's like a very real dream. I know I remember my first experience, and it has been, you know, over a decade. And I always recommend that they write it down because there may be small details that fade away over time. But it's a very real experience, and it's a very powerful experience that until you've experienced it yourself, you don't, you know, a lot of times clients cry. It's very deep emotional healing. It's positive. They feel lighter and freer afterwards.
Well, I guess indeed any visit to someone like yourself is for a purpose, and if you can get to the bottom of the well, I call it a problem, they presage you, then you're clearly helping them. By the sound of it, you've been so successful in your development in this way, one has to believe, and I'm sure you do, that you must have come into this life lifetime to do that particular work.
Yeah, who would have thought, though? I mean, I can assure you, when I was 20, 30, or probably even 40 years old, if somebody would have told me that I would be a hypnotist and specializing in past life regression and writing books about spirit communication with miscarried babies and healing from past life regression, I would have thought they were crazy. I was, you know, in the corporate world for nearly 20 years, and although I had had experiences with hearing from my deceased parents, that was kind of about as far as it went. And I think that that's why, I mean, I'm sure it's why, I know it's why now, that my dad was coming back to me, and the greatest gift he felt that he could give me was by him not coming, even though it would bring me great pain. It felt like it was the greatest gift he could give me. I don't know if I could have heard that completely right after the loss, you know, when you're in deep grief. But years later, I completely understand it now. And I don't think of Dylan with sadness anymore. I appreciate and love and accept, you know, that he came even briefly for me, because there's still the love. The love survives. You know, I have moms reaching out to me, and they're still in grief, and I remind them that they don't have to be in grief forever to stay connected to the baby, that before the grief came love, and the love survived.
Mm. Yes. Oh, I'm sure you've given a great comfort to many, many people. Now, I'm going back here to past life regression. You have undoubtedly heard of Dolores Cannon, and I've read most of her books, and she seems to specialise in past life regression, which seems to turn up lifetimes even on other planets. Now, have you ever experienced any oddity like that?
You know, very interesting you bring that up. I did experience that at one point. I was on the East Coast in Florida, and a psychic had asked me to come and do past life regressions with some of her clients and friends. So it was there that I did have some people have what I thought at the time was some very unusual experiences. But I think that people are drawn to the right person for the work that they need to do. So the people who seem to be coming to me are, it's more, if there is more mainstream past life regression, I would say in general, that's, you know, that's what I would get, more than things that are from another world. That said, you know, there are many worlds, and of course, you know, we've had other experiences. So I just haven't had that much experience working with those people at this point.
Mm. Do you find sometimes that if someone comes to you with a specific connection in mind, like they've had a miscarriage and they're anxious to try and contact whoever that soul was, does it ever happen that that particular soul doesn't want to make any contact, and you have to say that you can't sort of do it?
Yes, I think the soul would always have the option. The people I've worked with, again, I'm not sure why this has happened, but the baby comes. They, you know, just like we have different ways of learning, you know. Some people are auditory, some people are visual. It's the same when you get the information in hypnosis. Some people are very visual. You know, the one client I was talking about earlier, she's an artist. She said, I'm going to go home and paint her face. I can see her that clearly. Other people have not seen their child, but they've felt a presence and can get information mind to mind, so to speak. And in that way, they're able to communicate. So I think that when I haven't had an experience where they haven't come, but I suppose that's always possible.
Well, I just wondered, because it would be one thing for, say, a mother to want to contact a lost child in that way, but there might be reasons why they don't actually want to make contact. I was just curious to know whether that had ever happened.
Now, well, I think, first of all, if they're in deep grief, you know, when it's very fresh, it can be hard for them to contact us. So I do think that the grieving process is still human and necessary, and we need to get through that to some degree so that we can hear, you know, the messages or the contact. Sometimes they do come very quickly afterwards. As I said earlier, for me, it was 4.5 years later. That's a long time.
Absolutely,
and it's not,
yes.
Like, it was on my mind all the time. I mean, I now had 2 children, and, you know, it was, he was not in my mind all of the time. So when they come, I think, is up to them, but it's usually to help us heal. And I suppose if, you know, the only people that I saw in my practice were people that perhaps I would have a, you know, that there would be situations like that. But I think they want us, you know, I don't think they want us to stay in deep grief. You know, they want us to remember the love, and if they can help us on a soul level, I believe they will.
Right. Now, presumably, you do get people contacting you who simply want to contact a past relation, their mother, father, or whatever. Do you do that as well, although you specialize in this angel baby contact?
Yes. I just, you know, when you're in the in-between state, so to speak, you know, you can call out to your parents or lost ones, and it's, you know, it's very easy when you're having this experience, am I making it up? But it's so real that there's a knowing that it's, you know, that it's really happening to some degree. And so it's, of course, very healing.
Right. I mean, it would be natural, I would have thought, for you with that talent to be able to contact any departed soul if the need arose. So I thought I'd ask you the question. Right. Is there any particular part of your book that you would like to mention? I mean, I've read the review and you've sent me some details, but are there other parts of interest in addition to the actual angel babies that you've contacted? I mean, you seem to have a very good spiritual understanding. Do you give people the benefit of your knowledge on that side as well?
On what side?
Know, for example, you've about reincarnation and past lives. I think that's all part of spiritual understanding. I just wondered whether, since you've acquired some degree of knowledge by the way you talk, whether that's also in your book.
You know, this book, Angel Babies, was really written with a lot of where I was at that point, Mike, which was, wow, you know, my eyes were as big as saucers through most of the book. You know, I was like, can this really be happening? And it's really, for anybody who is metaphysical, they might be like, oh my gosh, she still doesn't get it, you know? Because I'm telling you, I was not a fast learner. And it took many times of Dylan communicating with me and telling me in meditation one day, just grabbing my face with his hands and saying, it's really me, stop doubting. Because right. the doubt was so big for me that the first half of the book, I talk about my experiences. Mm. And the ones that were real, like, you know, hearing him, I never doubted. But this whole mission about writing a book, because my thought was, I'm not a writer, what do I know about the other side? You know, wrong mommy, wrong life mission. But it was years later that I realized in one very crystallized moment that I hadn't lost an opportunity to write this book, and that I didn't want fear to get in the way, that I didn't want to lose an opportunity for my soul's growth. So I took the plunge and began writing, and what I realized was the book was all my stories. So there was a lot of doubt until I asked for proof and then received that proof, and then
right.
the research from all of the other parents and friends.
Right, and Patricia, we've actually virtually reached the end of our time. It's gone by so quickly. And I want you to have a minute or two to give people your website address where they can presumably buy your books, and your email address if it's something you give out. So perhaps you'd like to go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. It's www.patriciamcgivern.com, and that's my website. If you go to my website, you can see that you can purchase the book on Amazon.com and through different locations throughout the world, really. And yes, please write me at pmcgivern@aol.com. And I am still right. gathering research, and I would love to hear from anybody who's heard from their babies.
Oh, that's great. Fine. Well, when I do the archive for the program, I'll make sure that that information is put in there for anybody who perhaps has missed writing it down or reads the or listens to the program afterwards. Well, thank you very much, Patricia. It's a slightly different subject to my normal one, so that I think that made it even more interesting. You've been very successful, so I'm pleased to be able to speak with you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's always great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Right, friends, that was yet another very interesting guest. Next week I have Paula Moran. She's an enlightened master teacher, author, and master intuitive, and she is the emissary to Sanat Kumara, the planetary logos, also called the Ancient of Days, the Hindu deity. And Paula redefines enlightenment and illustrates to us how to liberate our limitation and become free. She developed a new enlightenment which offers an entirely new level of spirituality. So that's enough, I think, about our next week's guest. Thank you for being with me today. And I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.